podcast is sponsored by Lucy Pet
and Equus Pet Products.
Welcome to Doc Halligan Unleashed with Joey Villani. Hi, Joey.
Good morning, Doc. How are you today?
I'm great, and I'm very excited because we have a special guest joining our podcast, Dr. Lori Hess. You and I had dinner with her in New York a few years back, remember?
Yeah, I do. I you know what? I'm trying to remember the restaurant because I think it was like, I think it was like close to the West Side Highway, if I'm not mistaken.
It was an Italian restaurant.
Well, there's what other food is there?
Well, anyhow, I want to introduce Dr. Lori Hess, who I met through veterinary conferences. She is an amazing exotic animal veterinarian. She owns her own practice. She's a mother and an author. Dr. Hess, thank you for joining us on our podcast.
Thanks for having me. And just to set the record straight, the restaurant was Carmine's. It's a very famous Italian restaurant, and all New Yorkers have to have the experience of sharing that with their friends. So I distinctly remember that restaurant because it is world renowned. Anyway, now we can go on.
Was it Carmine's? Because I love Carmine's. I don't remember.
Yeah, I do believe it was. I haven't been there many times in the past few years, but I do remember a lot of food, and I remember where it was, and I think it was Carmine's. Yes.
Great.
Wow. That was a lot of fun. So a lot has happened. Dr. Hess, tell us about your ventures and your book that you wrote.
Oh, yeah. Well, I am an exotic animal veterinarian, so I treat all animals other than cats and dogs. So birds, rabbits, ferrets, all kinds of rodents like guinea pigs and chinchillas, all kinds of reptiles and amphibians. And, you know, not a lot of people get the opportunity to have all this fun with all these pets that I treat. So I wrote a memoir about my life as an exotic animal vet. And it was just, it's all the fun and crazy stories about all the exotic animals I treat and their slightly exotic animal owners.
So would you say that people who own exotic animals have unique personalities compared to people who own cats and dogs?
Absolutely. I think that people have to be just a little bit exotic themselves, a little different to want to have pets like, an amphibian or a sugar glider or, you know, just even a bunny or a guinea pig or a parrot. They're really different. They relate to you in the same way a dog or cat can, but they're totally different animals. Anatomically, they're different. Behaviorally, they're different. And some of them live, you know, some of the parrots and reptiles I treat live 30, 40, 50 years. So, you know, there's a big investment there.
Well, that explains Joey, his quirky personality, because tell her what exotic animals you have.
Well,
Jay.
She knows. She actually knows. I've spoken to her about Gurney, my umbrella cockatoo, who's still with me, which
That's
I have
great.
A question for you later about.
Okay.
You listen, I'm off the wall. I know it. I'm the first to admit it, but I have a question for you. Are there any specific animals that come in? I was going to say breeds, but technically it wouldn't be a breed that you kind of cringe that you gotta work because maybe they're more difficult than others. Are there, because I know with pet groomers, when somebody says they want their cat groomed, you know, I mean, money wise it's great, but we also cringe and say, oh God, I hope this cat's gonna be okay today. Do you ever get that feeling over, you know, when somebody calls in and says they have a certain animal?
I think at this point in my career, I'm almost 27 years in right now, I've gotten used to everything. I will say there was a time that, a very large reptile, like a 100-pound snake might come in and I'd be like, wow, it's coming out of a ski bag or a duffel bag. And that's a little intimidating. I used to treat primates. I don't anymore because I don't think they make good pets, but I definitely cringed when I had to treat them because they're dangerous and, you know, they can bite. They can be very aggressive and, you know, so I'm not a big fan of primates as pets, but, you know, I think the fun of my job is that all day long I get to see different kinds of animals. I never know what's coming in the door. So the variety and the surprise factor is kind of novel and fun, and it's a good part of my job.
Now, Dr. Hess, you are board certified in avian exotic medicine, correct?
Yes, I'm board certified in avian medicine, and I work all with exotic pets, as I said, no dogs or cats. I love dogs and cats, and I have my own, too many of my own, but at work, I guess I just play with the exotics.
Yeah, Well, it's great because I was amazed at how many people have exotic animals. I believe it's on the rise.
It definitely is. I mean, a lot of people live in small apartments or small homes, and they have neighbors that complain, or they don't have a lot of room to have a dog running around or a cat running around, dogs barking. So things like quiet bunnies and reptiles, small birds. I mean, you wouldn't have a big bird if you were worried about noise. But all those pets, you know, don't need to be walked, often don't take up as much space as a cat or a dog would. So they're really great for people who, you know, don't have a ton of space available for a bigger animal.
And Joey, how did you end up with Gurney?
A relationship of an old girlfriend when I was, I think I was 21 at the time, 55 now. And there was a place in New Jersey called Custom Parrot. And it was really the greatest bird store I was ever in. The woman was super knowledgeable. She was great. And Gurney was 6 years old. And we walked in. She lifted up her wing to scratch underneath her wing. So that was it. It was $1,000 later. It was in my girlfriend at the time's house for a week. And she did not want to be there. She wanted to be with me. So ever since, she's actually behind me being quiet right now. So, which is good because she's definitely a trickster. But Dr. Hess, I have a question for you. With exotic animals, do you see a lot of abuse that goes on because they're not getting the attention that they should after a while? Because I know with a lot of birds, that especially like cockatoos that need attention, and then they're put in their cages and kind of left alone. Do you see that a lot?
That's a really good question. And the answer is yes, I do. I don't necessarily see physical abuse like they've beaten the animal up. Mm-hmm. But birds, psychologically, you know, most big parrots are considered to have the intelligence of like a 3 or 4 year old child. Mm-hmm. They're really intelligent and they need stimulation, psychological stimulation, and activity and attention, enrichment every day. And unfortunately, too many people fall in love with their birds. I mean, you described just how you fell in love with yours. You saw this amazing bird when you walked in. Some of them are, you know, are really colorful. A lot of them talk. They say language. They can say hundreds of words. And that's really fun and attractive. And they don't, you know, they purchase on an impulse. They'll go buy that bird or adopt that bird because they just have to have it. It's such a cool pet. And after they have it for a while, they don't realize, you know, just how much attention this bird needs. And particularly when they get the bird and maybe it's a baby and, you know, it's cute and cuddly. And then it grows up and it becomes sexually mature. And then that bird is, you know, bonded to you as its mate, but you're not actually mating with it. So it can get really, really frustrated, sexually frustrated and quite aggressive. And that sometimes turns people off. So people often tire of their birds over time. And when they neglect them, then birds start to scream a lot. Sometimes they'll bite. Sometimes they'll be destructive of themselves. They'll pick at their feathers. I've even seen birds pick at their skin. I saw a bird, it was horrible, who lived for 24 years in a 2x2 cage. This was a pretty large Amazon parrot, the green parrots that you see commonly. Mm-hmm. And it literally had nothing in its cage. So it chewed a hole the size of a small saucer, you know, like a cup and saucer in its chest. It just kept digging at itself because it had nothing to do. And it's kind of like biting your nails. You just keep doing it, right? So yes, the answer is, yeah, I do see that quite a bit. It's very sad. So my you know, soapbox message to you is if you're going to fall in love with an animal, you're going to get one of these birds, you have to be really in it for the long haul and you have to learn about what that bird needs. And if you don't, you know, you really shouldn't have that pet.
How do you stop them from plucking? Because I know people that have birds that are very, very attentive. But if they go out of town for a period of time, which a lot of professionals do, and somebody's babysitting, I have one colleague of mine that came back and the bird started picking, not to the point where it, you know, where it's pulling all its feathers out, but doing that plucking that it never did before. And now it's in that habit. And the bird is getting a lot of attention, has a great diet, has a great social life with other birds in the house and the family. But now it's in that little plucking ritual. How do you get them to stop that?
Well, you use the right word there is habit. You know, birds are really creatures of habit. They don't like change. I've seen birds pick at their feathers and you know, damage themselves just because their cage was moved over in the room a few feet or someone painted the room and it changed color. There are so many things that set birds off. They really don't like when their environments change. So when someone leaves, you're right, it can be very difficult. I think the big thing is to socialize your bird at a young age. So get your bird used to people coming in and out, coming in and out of the cage, being around new people, making sure that birds can entertain themselves. Birds are kind of like babies. I don't know if you have kids, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. When babies cry, you're supposed to let them cry so that they can learn to, soothe themselves and calm themselves down. So not that we want birds to be screaming all the time, but you don't want to inadvertently reinforce a bird screaming or picking. So it's our natural reaction when a bird screams or picks or does something to go running over to it and say, stop that, shut up, and that's what we do. But really, what is that doing? It's telling the bird, hey, I do this behavior. I do this screaming. I do this biting, or I do this picking. And he or she, my person, my flock mate, my, guy, girl, comes running over to me and screams at me, gives me attention. They don't know that's negative attention. So that just reinforces that bad behavior. So as much as you can, if a bird is picking or doing some negative behavior, you want to ignore it. You want to give them opportunities to do other things. Like if you know your bird is going to scream or bite or pick when you leave the room, like if they're going to start screaming, for example, I've had people who've had birds who've tell me that they're going to be evicted as soon as they leave the building because they'll go to work and their birds start screaming. If you know you can anticipate that negative behavior, you want to give the bird something else to do. So if a bird is screaming, it can't scream when it's eating. It can't scream when it's chewing on its favorite toys. So save all those things, those alternative behaviors that you want to promote for when you know the bad behavior is coming. So feather picking is something you can work on over time. There's no magic bullet for it if it happens. If your bird suddenly starts to feather pick, there are behavioral reasons for feather picking, but you want to make sure too that you have that feather picking checked out by a veterinarian, because there are certainly, other reasons. Birds don't feel well, they pick at their skin. There are some diseases that can make them uncomfortable and actually, damage feathers and damage skin. So you want to rule out those diseases and then work with a behaviorist, a veterinarian or a knowledgeable breeder who knows behavior to try to eliminate that bad behavior.
How important is it for pet owners of exotic animals to find a veterinarian that's boarded versus just, the regular, average veterinarian in dealing with some of these animals that you see?
I think it's really important, in terms of boarding, there are not that many board certified avian or reptile or small mammal veterinarians in the world. You're talking like hundreds and not thousands. So it may be very hard for you, particularly if you live in a remote location, to try to find somebody who's actually board certified. Board certified people certainly do have that advantage of having that expertise, but there are also a lot of good veterinarians out there who, can treat exotics very well. And what I would say is there are associations like the Association of Avian Veterinarians, which has some boarded veterinarians and some, just very, very experienced bird veterinarians. And they have a website. And there are locators on there, find a vet locators that you can put your zip code in and find a really experienced bird veterinarian or reptile veterinarian or whatever you're looking for, depending upon the site near you. Mm-hmm. I do think the biggest mistake is that exotic pet owners in general, whether you're talking about a bunny, a bird, a lizard, whatever, they don't think that they should bring their pets to the vet for regular checkups. Their big thing is that, they don't have to unless they really need to, unless the animal gets sick. And there's the mistake because, these animals, a lot of them are prey species and they hide their illness until they're really sick. And then it becomes an emergency. And maybe it's like Sunday night at 10 o'clock at night, nothing's open. You can't call the 24-hour dog and cat clinic to try to bring your, pet iguana in. So you really want to make sure you have a relationship with a veterinarian and you have a plan for something to do when you have an emergency. So it's really important to establish that relationship as soon as you get that pet.
I used to practice for Dr. Frank Levack. Do you know who Frank?
Yes, I certainly do.
Yeah. So he, when he was studying for his boards, he used to send patients to me. I was working at an emergency clinic and he was impressed with my ability. So he called and said, hey, would you fill in for me while I'm studying for the boards? And I was like, okay. So mm-hmm. I worked at Wilshire Animal Hospital and I would go into the exam room and I had no idea of what species I was looking at. I'm very good with people though. I'd be like, oh, okay, Mrs. Smith, let me take Mr. Iguana in the back. And I go in the back and go, technicians, what's going on? And they'd be like, okay, doc, this is what it is. And they, they knew everything. And I could never have done it without his support staff because the technicians were just amazing.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there in that one of the reasons I became an exotic animal veterinarian is that we do go to vet school and we learn about lots of animals, but those are like the dogs, the cats, the farm animals. Many veterinary students have little to no education about exotic pets. And when I first started, I went out and I, you know, did an internship working with dogs and cats. And I had a little taste of exotic animals in my 1 year of internship and practice after graduation. And then I went out into the wide world of veterinary practice and, you know, saw dogs and cats. But the problem was exactly what you said. You know, these animals are coming in and people think you know about everything. You know, you're supposed to know about every species coming in. And I realized that I didn't know about those animals and I wasn't doing a good job taking care of them. So that's what made me want to go back and do, I did a 2 year residency and then, you know, a lot of time after that, specializing in exotic pets to really learn about them and, you know, the diseases they have, their different anatomies, their different requirements nutritionally, all of those things. So there are people though that are not necessarily board certified, but that do belong to organizations like the Association of Avian Vets, the Association of Reptile and Amphibian Vets, the Association of Exotic Mammal Veterinarians, that really do care about taking that extra step to learn about exotic pets. And the technicians, as you said, are invaluable. They really specialize and they know what they're doing if they work with these animals every day.
Dr. Hess, what's your feeling on zoos?
I think zoos have come a long, long way. I think zoos do a lot of great things now. They're very important in conservation. There are a lot of great programs that go on in zoos. Most zoos in the U.S., you know, are really carefully regulated now, and animals are treated really, really well. They're kept in their more of a natural setting. We know a lot about how they should be kept, what they should be eating, what temperature, how many animals there should be in an enclosure, all of these things. It's not like, you know, when we were growing up years ago, I think all three of us here are about the same age, you know, where there are those horrible bars and it was a cage and you saw the tiger pacing back and forth. You know, it's not like that in most places now. Mm-hmm. So zoos can be a wonderful source of education for people to teach them about the importance of animals and what they need and to teach them to appreciate them in the wild. So I think zoos can be really, really great when they're done the proper way.
Tell us about your book.
Well, my book began as just, anecdotal stories that I would tell people at cocktail parties through my life. You know, I saw this really cool snake today. It was really insane because this guy came in and, you know, I would tell these stories. And I was telling these stories to a client of mine one day. And she said, you know, I'm a writer and I'd really like to write about you. And I thought, I never really thought about writing a book. And I started to investigate it. I ended up not doing it with this particular person, but I did hook up with a writer who helped me write the book. We kind of co-wrote it. It was really a labor of love. It went on for years and years, and it's all based on, you know, the names have been changed, obviously, but it's all based on true stories. You know, it's all the different animals that I've seen and all the fun people that I've met, all the families. I've become such a big part of their family because they have an animal, as I said, for 20, 30, 40 years. And you see that animal. I'm seeing animals now that I saw 27 years ago. And I've even seen animals that are older than I am who've been around in families and passed down from generation to generation. So it's about those bonds that I've made with the pets, but also with the people who own them. Some of it is really funny. Some of it's very touching. Some of it's tear jerking. It's also a story a little bit about my family and how they've grown up with me and my kids and seeing me as the mom, but also as the vet. So it's a fun read. It's a light read for anybody who enjoys it. It's, you know, the exotic, it's called Unlikely Companions, The Adventures of an Exotic Animal Doctor. And it's available online.
Well, and you know what I think is interesting is this whole wet market discussion of viruses mutating from animals that shouldn't be in close contact. And when you travel around the world, it seems that there isn't as much regulation, is there, on what animals you can have?
Yeah, I mean, zoonotic disease, you know, diseases that pass from animals to people, as you know, with COVID, you know, with the bats and everything, it's a really big thing. And we're lucky that we have very strict regulations on our food sources, like chickens, for example, a great example right now in the world, and some of the in Asian countries where there are more sort of wet markets out there and not regulated food markets, where people just bring chickens and there's no one really examining them. You know, there are diseases do get into the food and realize that birds are flighted. So they can fly over oceans and you know, some diseases are transmitted on rodents that go in ships, right? These animals are traveling around the world. And unfortunately, they spread. They can spread disease into our food sources and they can spread it to people. So veterinarians have a very important role in controlling those infections. And part of my role, I'm a federally accredited vet, so I write health certificates for animals that have to go overseas. And I'm really, really careful about what kind of animals I'm going to say are healthy to go. And different countries have different requirements. So that is a very big part of being an exotic animal veterinarian, knowing, you know, those regulations and what's appropriate.
Hey, I have a personal now question.
Sure.
Okay, so my umbrella cockatoo, which it's funny because we my ex-wife and I we share Gurney. Okay, and what I mean is when I go out of town, Gurney goes to her because I know that Gurney's taken care of the way that I want her taken care of, and the way Gurney wants to be. But it's an hour and 15 minute ride. I think I got the only good bird in the world that gets car sick.
And, oh, you horrible, don't. You don't.
Really?
No, it's common? Really common. It's really common. I mean, birds throw up in the car all the time. And, you know, a lot of times they freak out when they get in the car. A lot of times they're crying. They're trying to get out of their carriers. Some of them like running in the car, but it's really common for them to get car sick. So, I mean, it's hard to prevent. It's usually harmless because usually it's a one or two time kind of deal. What I tell people to do, and I don't, you know, sometimes it helps and sometimes it doesn't, but I tell people, if you know you're going to take your bird in your car, particularly if you're going on a longer ride or if you're going to the vet, do some practice runs. You know, a lot of birds never see the carrier. They're almost never out of the house. So take the carrier out. Put it on your dining room table or whatever. Let the bird eat some treats in it. Get used to the carrier, not be stressed. You know, walk around the house in the carrier. You know, bring your bird outside to the car. Take a run around the block. Bring some snacks if it's going to be a long trip. I think having your bird have a little snack of something in its stomach before it goes, mm-hmm. but not too much that it's, you know, maybe going to throw up in the car. I think all of those things can help. You know, again,
see,
if
I'm
your
concerned.
Bird does it, I wouldn't worry. There are worse things, and it's okay. Really not a big problem.
And what about ginger, Dr. Hess? I heard that ginger, 150 mgs per kick, can help settle their motion sickness.
I mean, ginger is usually safe for birds, and I have used it on occasion more in some particular diseases that unfortunately involve a lot of gastrointestinal upset. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's a problem as long as you don't overdo it. You know, I would definitely talk to your vet about your specific animal, your specific bird, just in case there is some contraindication. Mm-hmm. But in general, a small amount is safe, and it is something ginger. We do use. Yeah.
You know, my concern is I'm going to Florida. I'm going to be relocating. So at some point, she's going to have to take this 1,400-mile trip with me. And for 40 years, she's been car sick. And she travels quite often, at least 4 or 5 times a year. You know, she's in her carrier in the car, and it's Murphy's Law. And it's a sneeze, and it's seed getting spewed everywhere and whatever else that she was eating. But I would
maybe give her some very, very tiny meal of something really easily digested, maybe okay. something like a little piece of bread or a cracker, something that's not going to sit in her stomach for a really long period of time. Mm-hmm. That will kind of start going through. That way, you know, she's not on an empty stomach, but at the same time, she doesn't have a big full stomach in the car. And then she has a lot to throw up if she is feeling a little queasy.
You know, I have a story for everyone here. I have to tell a story. And I don't know if you guys, because, you know, even though nobody sees us, we record this on Zoom. So I don't know if you've seen me laughing there for a little while.
I did. I saw you smirking. No,
I was thinking of, I was thinking of something that happened when I was in my early 20s. So I had the apartment that everyone came over, okay? And this is going back a long time ago. So all guys, and we're hanging out, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. There had to be at least 10 of us in this small little living room. And we would play John Madden football. We had a league. And we even see the bird. She's so we had a league going, and Gurney would be out. And Gurney would go from person to person to person until they got sick of her and they'd shoo her off to the next person. Matter of fact, when a box of pizza came out, she knew what it was. She knew that that was her favorite. She'd stand by the box and get her pizza, whatever. I know it's not the best thing for her, but just
everything
how
in moderation. Everything in moderation.
Just how it was back then. Anyway, we were playing and she was on my one friend's shoulder and he was playing and he was losing and he was getting mad. So he didn't want Gurney there anymore. So he shoot her off a little bit more abruptly than normal. And you seen her face, and she looked at him, she stared him down, And she went behind everyone. And I watched this. And sort of another friend of mine went behind, got jumped on the couch where she was level with his head. She turned around and she pooped right on his shoulder. And it was done purposely. And he goes, I think she did that on purpose. And after he cleaned up and came back, she came back around, turned around real quick. And he's going, she's going to do it again. And before he can get up, she pointed and shot and got him again. So you talk about birds are very smart. Yep. Yes.
Do birds get along with cats and dogs?
That's a great question too. And I get asked that quite a bit. And my answer is yes, when done the right way, they can. You know, birds are prey species, cats and dogs are naturally predators. And you know, even the best intentioned, kind of sweetest cat or dog may want to play with a bird like it's a toy and just carry it around like it's a stuffed animal. But remember, the cats and dogs have sharp teeth. They have saliva that has a lot of germs in it, a lot of bacteria and stuff that you know, birds don't normally get exposed to. So my answer is you can have cats and dogs and birds in the same house. You just have to supervise them. I have six cats in my house right now. I've had dogs. Haven't had dogs for a while because I'm not home that much. But I have six cats and I have two large parrots and they have all lived together for a long time. I only let my bird out when I'm in the room. Even if the cats are there, I'm very, very careful. And I would never let the birds just hang out on the cats. You know, you see these pictures like on the internet of the cat sitting on the back of the dog or the bird. You know, I think you have to be really smart and careful because you don't want to have, you know, tragedy, something you could prevent.
And tell me, where did the mimicking and the vocalization of certain birds like the African greys, how does that work? Why do they mimic you?
Well, birds learn language of their own by mimicry, and certain bird species are more intelligent and process language a little bit better. I mean, you said it right. I mean, African gray parrots are known to be amazing, amazing talkers, and they do learn by mimicry. But what's interesting is that birds don't just mimic. It's not just a matter of repeating. They really learn words in context. I have a story. I was at a bird show once. I think I may have been on my book tour, and I was talking to a guy about his bird, and he had an Amazon parrot that he had for years and years and years, and he would give it food every day. And birds, you know, when they love you, they regurgitate to you and they try to feed you. That's what birds do to each other. I'm sure, Joe, you must have experienced this with your bird. I know with my birds, they do that too. So this bird literally would eat its breakfast and regurgitate it to this guy every single day. And at one point, one morning, the bird regurgitated and the guy kind of looked at the bird and brushed it off. And the bird looked right at the man and said, "Food, good." You know, and the bird was like, "Hey, dude, you know, I'm eating here and I'm sharing it with you. Why aren't you paying attention?" So that bird knew that that was food and that was yummy food. And he had heard that before. I mean, I have another crazy story that's really, really crazy. I was on a news show a number of years ago. I don't know if you remember, there was a story in the news of a man. He was married and divorced and then with his second wife, and his second wife and he were supposedly attacked. He was found dead in an apartment, and his second wife was very, very injured. She was shot. And it turned out that they thought that the second wife was trying to commit suicide and also had killed her husband. Well, a year later, the bird, an African gray parrot, was back at the original home of the first wife and the guy's kids, who were adults, and they were eating dinner. And out of nowhere, in the man's voice, the bird screamed out, "Don't effing shoot me. Don't effing shoot me." So this was a year later. That bird had been so traumatized by whatever happened that bird, unless it happened 10 times, which it didn't, because this man was shot and dead, unless the, you know, woman killed him multiple times, but she didn't. That bird was so traumatized that bird remembered that sentence and brought it with it a year later and then said it really, you know, to the people that it was trying to relate to, like, "Dad was shot by this woman." So there was actually a criminal trial as to whether, including whether this bird could be used as evidence in some way. It was a really interesting story. Wow. But, you know, birds do speak in context. That's the point.
That's amazing. Well, hey, Lori, we just loved having you on our podcast. I can't thank you so much. I'm so glad that we reconnected. Tell our listeners, one, how they could come see you as a vet, and or two, how they could read your book.
Sure. Well, I own a veterinary hospital in New York, outside New York City, and it's the Veterinary Center for Birds and Exotic. Our website is www.avian, so it's A-V-I-A-N, exotics, with an S on the end, vet, avianexoticsvet.com, avianexoticsvet.com. And again, my book is Unlikely Companions, The Adventures of an Exotic Animal Doctor. And again, it's available online on Amazon and in bookstores. So thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lori. And let's break bread at some point in the future.
Carmine's.
Carmine's. Yeah. Dinner number two when you're back in New York.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dr. Hess.
Thank you, Dr. Hess.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more free vet advice. And, you know, we're pretty entertaining, aren't we, Joey?
I think so. I definitely think so. And make sure that you like and share. That's really important. And give us questions. We want questions. We want to know what you want us to talk about. So you can email your questions to docandjoeyunleashed@gmail.com.